Oh yeah, and Frank, so what was the question you had?
My, since we were talking about art and stuff, my interesting question was, how do you guys feel about AI art? Because I'm curious about this because I'm not an artist. So again, I want to hire artists because I want to hire people in the community. But on the other hand, if I learn the prompts right, if I wanted to make something very new, could I do it with AI? But would I want to do with AI? Because then I'm not really hiring some. You know what I mean? So there's an up and down. Do you use it as like a helper? Do you not use it at all because you know people in the community? You know what I mean? It's kind of an interesting question.
Well, my specific thought on that is that I think that there's a lot of great creators that are absolutely terrible at describing what it is they see in their mind. Mm-hmm. And if you got infinite money, sure, you can hire 15 different concept artists to draw up the thing that you describe, and hopefully one of them gets that thing. Mm-hmm. The thing that I think that AI art will be good for is for that right there, where you're like, okay, can you make me a panda riding a horse with a spear and a Lakers jersey, right? Like something like that, like where it's like a random thing. And then it gives you a couple images, and you're like, this one. And then you take that and you give that to an artist. You're like, this is what I want.
That's perfect idea.
That's how I see it. Uh-huh. Yeah, that's how I see it. Other than that, it's like, you know, I'm sure like 10 years from now, they're going to have some crazy program that you'll be able to print out a whole comic. But for right now, I think that's, you know, it's still going to be a little while before it can do it to that level of degree. Plus, there's certain things where like, you know, even if it could do it perfectly, sometimes, and you know this from watching anime, there are like even Shibis, for example, like that super hyper animated, like big head, small body. Yeah. Obviously, that doesn't look like the character from the previous screen, but that's done on purpose. It's done in a way that like it actually pulls you in. And that's something they do really well in anime, where like an arm might be slightly longer in one scene than another. And it's to show something, right? It's not like, you know, not because they have stretching powers or something, but it's like, maybe it's like how fast they were moving and it's an illusion, things like that. And I feel like AI art's going to take a while to figure that part out. Mm-hmm. And I think that artists, like it's one of those things where it's like, you know, it's already there. It already exists. You can't get rid of it. So do you let other people use it and create their works faster? Or do you use it to help your artist understand you better? That's how I see it.
I know Todd's
an artist. That's why I'm definitely.
I see it a good way too, but go ahead.
Well, I'm kind of touting that line on both sides where I can see use case for it, but there's a huge problem if it's inadvertently stealing from other artists. And that's where my biggest issue is what I've read on it, what I've seen on it. Have I used it? Sure. But is it, if it's, you know, really taking all these algorithms from, you know, let's any creator out there, even if it's a writer, right? And AI is using AI, ChatGPT, if it's writing a script that someone else wrote and it's taking part of that without credit, as an artist, you're kind of like, wait a minute, that's really crappy. You know, I mean, that's something where if that element can be fixed, where if there's some sort of royalty system or something put in place or credit system where it's like, hey, you know, we took these 10 images from these 10 artists and compiled it for you. Okay.
I actually have like a complete, like, this is something where like, if I had infinite money, I would build this myself. The first one is a system that solely sources royalty-free images. I think that would be the first step.
Yep.
And the second step, and you'd have to pay to get this part, it would be the ability to pull from a collection of images that have been built or that have been linked to an NFT so that it's traceable, right? Mm-hmm. And then automatically, like if it pulls from these 10 images, 10% of your image to build this image, whatever I'm paying monthly goes towards the creation of these images, and anybody who owns those NFT automatically deposit in their bank account. And the reason why I love that idea is that's what PROs in the music industry do, right?
Yes.
Not exactly like that, but the whole idea is they've got these systems that scan the world. Like there was a bar here in Nashville that got closed down because they were running a Spotify channel, a personal Spotify channel, and they weren't paying for the rights to play it in their bar. That's like buying Netflix and opening a movie theater. You can't do that, right?
Yeah.
So the whole idea is that
that's a great idea.
Yeah, like they already have systems for this in the music industry. Yeah. And so that's what I would love to see that happen. But again, yeah, like if I have the resources, I'd build it already. But I think that the royalty-free image one, there might actually be somebody working on that. Because like then it makes, that makes perfect sense. Like if everything's royalty-free and you're just melding them together, then no one's getting hurt in that. And I think if you do it that way, it's like, you know, it's the same as like taking a shovel, painting a gold, you can sell it now, like it's yours, right? So you can still sell it. But the other version where like, if it's pulling from other art and then you sell it, I don't mind it for the concept art of giving it to an artist. Like, hey, here's a general look I'm looking for. Because like, that's like me going on Google and making a mood board. I don't own any of those images, right? Yeah. So if I have AI art, make a melded mood board to give to an artist, I don't see it as a problem. But if I then sold that art, that's when it becomes a problem.
Well, and that's a good point, is that's the other side of the coin for me is, you know, somehow setting it up like you talked about, you know, where whether it's free, royalty free or paid artist, you know, the people you're using the art, there has to be some sort of system in place. But the other side of it is what I've used it for. I actually used it for a cover for the first book that I signed with Dark Space Studios was Rona Chronicles. And I used three AI images that I composited together, and then I painted on top of those three images all the different various things that I needed, light sources, you know, things like that. So it had this concept art feel, but I used it as a foundation, and I was using bits and parts of different pieces. So, you know, that's what concept art is, basically. You know, it's I'm using these 10 different images of a mountain, of a knight, of a horse, of a tent, of a sky, and I'm putting it all together, and you have no idea when I'm done, looks nothing like kind of what I started with. And that's how I ended up using it, because I did. I felt a little dirty. I'm like, wait a minute. Like, I'm using AI art, but I need to make it my own. And that's, as an artist, I went to art school, you know, I went to, you know, I had my degree in art in small business. I'm like, I feel like shady using it and not giving these people due credit, you know? So I'm kind of on both sides. But I'd love to have a place, something in place to make sure artists are paid.
Yeah. Yeah. For Mittens, I actually like had a thing in my head, but I didn't know what to say and how to describe it. And it's just a highway going to a city, and it's for issue two of Mittens. But like, I got this from Midjourney, and I just typed in like highway going to a city. Mm-hmm. And then I'm like, you can take that, but don't copy it, obviously, and then just make it your own.
I was gonna say like that's Greg's exactly the example. Like there's times where like he tries to explain something to our artist and it's not getting through, and typically he has to explain it to me and then I can explain it better to the artist, right? And it's like that's who it's for. It's for the creators who they've got amazing ideas, they've got stuff in their head, they just can't draw. And so like I think it's a freeing thing for people who are creative but don't have the technical skill to showcase that creativity. To me, the other thing too, is like one of those things where, I'll give like free marketing advice, even though I literally get paid as a marketing consultant, right? Mm-hmm. Like, so why do I do that? It's like, if this person was going to pay me, they're going to pay me. If they're not, they're not, right? There's plenty of people where I've given them free stuff and they're like, how much do I owe you? It's like, oh, that person wants to pay me. And other people, they're like, cool, thanks, later. They've gotten that. They would have got it from somewhere, right? They would have done something to get it. And I think that like, if you get somebody who uses AI art to then go and get artists, they were going to get the artist. This just made that faster. So that's why I say like for artists, like if you want to avoid people stealing art, the best way to do it is like I was saying, like if anything, as an artist, promote the use only to get the initial thoughts out of your head. So tell people how to use it right. As opposed to all the people who are like, don't use it, run away from it, it's bad, it's stealing art. It's like, but someone's going to do it. So if they're going to do it, why not teach it? You know what I mean? It's like, if someone's got a sword, don't tell them to throw away the sword, show them how to use it.
Yeah.
Right? That's the whole idea. It's like, it's already there. You know, like, I guess you can throw it out. Yeah. Someone can just make another sword, right?
And it's a tool.
I've played around with AI art a little bit, and you have to get the prompts right to actually know exactly what you want.
Yeah.
I've only planned for, I mean, I don't have time to learn every single prompt to make a prompt this long to make it perfectly what I want. So,
yeah. It's called like prompt engineering. That's like a whole thing where like that's going to be a skill on resumes in the future.
Yep.
The ability to prompt correctly. Because, like, like for me, like I use ChatGPT all the time for stuff. So like it's, you know, but it's such a great tool for idea generation and brainstorming. Yeah. So with the artwork, it's like, I want something scary. And then you see a bunch of stuff. You're like, oh yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at. All right. Like, let's take that and make it look like this. Let's do it again. Right. And like, I think Midjourney does that where like, it'll make a couple of them and then you can tell it like, okay, take this one and make it a more variation.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, infinite money. Sure. I'd hire concept artists for days, but the point is, if I can't, like, I really would. Like, I love concept art. Like I love, I'm that guy who, when I played Mortal Kombat, I would try to unlock the whole crypt and read all the descriptions of all these artwork that they'd hide. Yeah. I'm like, man, that looks awesome. I'm like, why didn't they do that version of Scorpion? That looks dope. Like, I love learning about all of that concept art. I love when people put it at the end of their comics. Like, it's such a cool idea. But the point is, like, if I can't afford it, it's not going to happen anyways. But if I can get this design and get it into the hands of an artist and I can make my comic created faster and then I can earn money with that comic, I can then eventually, hopefully, hire more concept artists. So that's kind of that's how I see it. I see it like as a thing that will, like, it's like the internet allowing you to connect with more people. Yes, you can door to door, or you can go into a Facebook group and message 3,000 people at once.
Right.
It's like, it's a tool to speed up the things you already wanted to do. Yeah. Right. I could go to art school for 4 years. I could take, you know, 700 hours of drawing courses just to draw a single piece of concept art to then give to my artist. But now I'm an artist and I don't need to hire one.
So I used when I made that highway thing, I also did a couple other things on Midjourney, like whenever that came out, like 2 years ago or whatever, because I was like, oh, it's kind of cool. And I had this idea in my head, and this is going to be like way later on in our story, but I needed a sword, but I needed to like describe what the sword looked like, and the first two were not at all what I wanted. And
what the hell is that second one on the top right?
Yeah, I don't even know.
It looks like if a kid tried to make the diamond pickaxe from Minecraft. With tools they found around their house.
So the closest to that, what I wanted is the third image, the one that's the bottom left, and that's like what I'm going to use as a concept art for like when we get to that story.
It's a tool. It's just got to be used responsibly, and there's got to be parameters set in place with any tool. You know, like drawing tablets when they first came out, people were, you know, it was a whole different thing when Photoshop first came out. You know, I remember it was just like, oh, this is terrible. And, you know,
when the internet was first came out.
Yeah, exactly.
With all technology. He's going to
take away TV.
Yeah.
Oh my God, there's TikTok now.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Sorry, we got off tangent here for a while. You were asking a bunch of questions. So.
Yeah.
Got off track.
But it is cool because like we've chatted about AI on a couple episodes now, and it's just like, I feel like for everybody who didn't get a Facebook account until like 8 years after everyone got one, like people need to realize technology is going to move forward irrelevant to their feeling.
Exactly.
If you find out that ChatGPT had 5 million or was it 1 million users in only 5 days, like you have to understand that this is definitely not going to go away. And it's like, if you don't figure out how to direct people using it the way that you think it should be used, it's going to be used however anybody figures it out. And that's why I say it's like, it's better to learn it yourself and then teach others how to use it. Like for me, ChatGPT, I use it for a lot of business stuff and I'm teaching my clients how to use it. And I tell them, I'm like, don't do it this way because this way, like that's going to look like a robot wrote it. You could use this though as a basis for your ideas and then research this stuff.
Yeah.
Right? Like don't just blanketly, you know, use this stuff. Like, sure, if you want to just create a blog channel and you're just trying to throw garbage out there, you know, might as well just, you know, use it because you wouldn't have done it anyways. But if you're trying to create valuable things, like I created a 36-page ebook using ChatGPT because I have an entire marketing strategy I use. I know what it is, but I don't have the time to write out a 36-page book. So what I did was I go to ChatGPT and I go, here's my marketing strategy. Here's an outline. Please just describe each of these steps. I gave it the steps and then it just wrote the description. It's like the description's on the internet. Anyone can write those descriptions, but now I've gathered it in one place. So like I then teach others to do it that way. It's like, if you know this information, you can get the right information, have it type it out for you like an assistant would. You know, you can pay, and there's a paid version of it. So you're technically paying somebody, right? Like, it's like the whole idea is like, it's a tool. Learn how to use it. And if you think that others are going to abuse it, teach others how to use it better. Mm-hmm. Again, like the sword, it's already there. It's on the table. Don't just let it sit there. Show people how it's supposed to be used.
Yeah. So when AI takes over and you go missing, Dylan, we'll know why. You were like an early adopter.
Yeah.
I'm just taking over.
I am the AI.
It's not ChatGPT. It's called ChaosGPT. And actually somebody did use it to literally ask, like, what's, like, the end of the world. And it's, like, a nuclear, like,
That's lazy. That's not gonna be a nuclear warhead. It's gonna be a bunch of people that press buttons and EMP the whole
continent, and describe what would happen and like basically like a complete apocalypse of the entire world.
Yeah, it'll be a big dumpster fire.
Yeah,
dumpster fire.
All right. So, what is your favorite aspect of being a comic book creator?
I would say, kind of all of it. I mean, even though it's stressful, it's financially a thing. You have to pay people, you have to do shows. You guys know, like, you know, setting up for shows and the stress and everything that goes along with being a creator, having proofs of your book and merchandise, doing Kickstarters, setting all that up, all the art, all the creative side behind that. It's just, I enjoy all of it, no matter the good and the bad. Like I did my first show behind the table maybe 6-7 years ago at a local show out by Seattle. And, you know, all I had was like a 6-page black and white preview issue of Ice Pick. And I think I sold like 20 copies maybe at that show. And I'm like, whoa, this is like a crappy ash can 6-page preview, you know, and, you know, 15-20 people came up, loved it. You know, I ended up doing some commissions that show and I was like, this is like a thing, you know. I mean, I just never thought that people would enjoy what I produce selfishly, right? I mean, I do fan art for myself because I love characters, and I created Ice Pick in it when I was a teenager, and that was because of my love of comics and storytelling and superheroes and stuff. So just everything. I mean, I enjoy everything of it.
Now for me, I enjoy writing and telling a good story and creating the characters and stuff. Now, since I'm not a good artist, you know, I try and figure out exactly what to put into the story and stuff. But I have this whole thing for Turkana all outlined. And like with the Taming of April, same thing. I love the idea of writing and love the of storytelling. That's to me is my favorite aspect of being a comic book creator or a writer in general. I'm working on another book, more of a novel, obviously, but I'm working on another book, and it's about a guy who is kind of divorced and he's living on his own, and he's a writer, but nobody really reads his stories. And then he meets this girl and is like, oh, well, I like your story. So they basically, you're reading all these different stories, and these three stories have something to do with his life. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, I love the idea of storytelling and the idea of surprises and that kind of stuff. So that's my thing. I love telling stories.
I like the world building stuff. Like I was thinking about like Todd, I definitely agree. Like, there's so much stuff that's interesting throughout the whole journey, especially because we just did our first tabling of the show. And it's like, I think there's like a bunch of milestones I really like. It's like that. The first one's like when you get like this aha moment of something in your world where like, I could do this. Like, oh wait, but if I did it like this, then this could happen. And this could, like, that chain of events that happens, like that first spark feels great. That first piece of artwork that's finished for that scene that you knew was going to look cool, and then it looks even cooler. And then the next step is when it gets colored and it's even cooler. And then when it's physically printed and you're holding it and it's even cooler. And it's like, I think each of those steps, and then definitely being able to, like, I think what the last thing would be like when somebody finds out you make comics and they're like, what? And they're like, oh yeah, one second, I got a comic. And they're like, wait, you print them? And it's like, I don't just like make comics. Like, they're actual comics. I think each of those little steps are so awesome.
And for me, it's like really addicting. Like, it's almost a drug, loosely, you know, when you table a show and you have fans come up to you and you're like, okay, this is awesome. Like, this is a great feeling, right? And then you're like, screw it. I'll do that same show because, you know, it was fun, right? So you do it out of fun and you go back and you have the same fans come back and say, hey, what do you got? What's new? You know, mm-hmm. And you're like, okay, this is kind of a thing. And there is a lot of those milestones. And I'm curious, Frank, when you're talking about writing and story building, I get a lot of inspiration as a writer from film and entertainment, you know, TV shows and film. I actually, when I was in college, I worked on a few short films. One of them I was kind of an art director for, a documentary, but that really got me into the whole, just a whole different perspective of writing comics. Because I went to college after I graduated, obviously after high school and all that stuff, but after reading so many comics and then you start to get the behind the scenes of films and stuff, you know, I write scripts very film kind of oriented.
Like a screenplay.
Almost. It's like a far shot, medium shot, close up. You know, I put that specifically in my script to help the artist kind of convey, like, where are we in the scripting, you know, or the art? Where does it need to be? Where do the characters need to be? Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of curious, as another writer, you know, is it just, you just give a description for the page, or is it kind of panel by panel description?
The way I do it, I write it, like I said, I started off writing screenplays in the early 2000s.
Okay.
And I've written like four different screenplays, never sold anything yet. And then I started writing books, novels, and then I switched to comic books. And wait a minute, comics are kind of like a screenplay. It's like, I usually put like page one, panel one, blah, 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 blah. You know, then panel two, blah, 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 blah. This person says this. And the first comic, there's a lot, you can see there's a lot of different panels on this one, but as I progress with other comics, I spread apart the panels a little bit so you can see things better and stuff. And I found that better. You can't, six panels in one page is like a lot. Usually between four and five, I think five is probably the good one. And with the new one that I have coming out, the number seven, there's actually one page where there's one panel and it's like, she's totally shocked. But that's one of the things I've learned about writing comics. It's like the less panels, the more dramatic the scene is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's interesting. I love splash pages. I love two. I mean, my books are littered with two page splash pages. Mm-hmm. They're kind of a pain to get printed because you got to make sure they line up. But if they get printed right. But yeah, I do the same thing. I feel like there's times where you can have 7, 8, 9 panels, maybe, if depending on what's going on. Mm-hmm. But I try to minimize my writing so that it's more the storytelling, like the panels flow panel to panel, page to page.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's an action sequence. Okay, boom, that was an impact. Now we go back to some storytelling. You know what I mean? Like, I try to keep it pretty tight, pretty concise. You know, I don't overwrite, I guess, a book.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, that's definitely something that we've had to work on. Like, Greg wrote most of these comics into a novel at first, essentially. Like, it's just a story. Yeah. And then, coincidentally, he also moved it into, like, storyboards first. But the difference between storyboards and paneling is that storyboards can have multiple action sequences within a single storyboard, but a panel can't. Like, that's a unique thing with comics, is that you can't show one character doing multiple actions, or at least definitely not more than two actions at a time in a single panel, unless it's something like, you know, maybe it's like a Flash character, right? A speedster, and they're like, they're doing multiple things at once, but then that's different. But you were talking about having the page spread. This is actually a two page splash page, essentially, where we paneled on the outsides of
I like that.
Yeah, and so, and then this one here is actually without the writing on it, but on the wall there's going to be an ancient language written in blood that we put on there after the fact. But yeah, basically, like, there's tons of creative ways to do it. Like, splash pages are fun, and I like what you're saying. Like, the less panels, the more what's it called, dramatic. I do agree with that, but it's also just like what you're trying to pull someone's attention towards, right? Like, you can make panel sizes bigger. You can do panoramics. You can do tall ones. Mm-hmm. You can do overlapping ones. Like, I think my favorites are when the panels go right to the edge of the comic and then the panels lay on top of it. Kind of like that last one we showed, but like, it just in general, like whenever it bleeds into a corner, like, mm-hmm. you know, overlaps the edge of a panel to like, you know, come out at you. Like it is kind of funny. It's like, you know, there's the square block ones, and then slowly you can progress out of that and make it a little more chaotic. And actually one of our favorite panels or pages is the, our ink, issue one, where like the edges of the, each of the boxes are completely warped because it's a nightmare scene. Like he's having a dream and something crazy is happening. So there is no straight lines. It's all erratic lines that are boxing in each of these panels. So like you can be so creative with that. It's really fun.
I learned, you know, the big, you know, splash pages, as you call it, by reading The Death of Superman back in the early 2000s. I mean, early 90s. When you know, when he was fighting that one, you know, Doomsday, it was one page.
Yep. And that's what the 90s did. Like there, I mean, I started reading late 80s and then kind of was there with the Image boom. And so I got to see a lot of those guys from Image, what they were doing, all their Marvel stuff. And if you look at what they did when they were doing Spider-Man, X-Men, you know, X-Force, those types of stuff, it was very, very different than what they did with their Image creator stories. The panels were explosive. They were more in your face. They were more creative. The story writing was definitely different. You know, the action was like cranked up to 11, you know, where I just felt like the chains were kind of taken off and they could do whatever they wanted. Hmm. And if you look at like how DC and Marvel, they've adapted some of that over the years, but back then it was like, you know, there's very structured ways to make a comic book and panel layouts and stuff. And like Image just broke down those doors, you know, and said, no, we can do whatever we want. Like have fun with it. Right. It's comics.
Yeah.
So even though the episode is about you guys, I have a couple of favorite things of being a comic book creator. Because we did our first ever like table.
Yeah.
That was awesome. It was like slow in the beginning because like everybody was like getting set up to do their D&D thing. Then they started like coming over to just look at like what we got going on. Yeah. I sat down while Dylan just like set up the table because he's a marketer. So he knows like what to put where. And I'm just like, what if I put this here? He's like, no, you just sit there. Eat the brownie, and I'll just... So I was just sitting there. And then like one of the best things so far that's happened in the almost 6 years of doing this is the first sale that we ever got at a convention. Yeah. So that was awesome. And we took a picture of like without, you know, showing their card info or anything. And I was like, that's like one of the coolest things ever. Even though like Kickstarter was the first time we made money on something, I thought actually getting a sale like in person was cool.
Yeah.
And the last person to buy something that day, she wasn't even part of the convention. She lived upstairs. And like how things like formed was just very weird. It was like just a small world. So there was this job that I was applying to and had three different interviews at. Didn't get the job, but whatever. And she actually works at that place, but I did not know that. I learned that the next day. What she did was she came over to the table and she was just looking at all the comics that we had. Mm-hmm. She picked up Mittens and I was like, she's like, I've never read a comic book before. And I was like, oh, today's the day.
Yeah.
And I was like, you like cats? And she's like, I just got a cat. I was like, that's
done.
And she's like, I named it ZD. And I was like, that's even weirder. So she got Mittens and was like looking through it. And then she didn't realize like we actually like made them.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she's like, oh, you guys like collect these? And I was like, no, we like make them. And she's like, oh, like who wrote them? And then Dylan's like, well, he like writes like all of them and then I edit them to make them better and stuff. And she's like, oh, can you sign it? And I was like, yeah, that's cool. So I had to do that. And I signed a magnet, which was also weird. So that was like some of the coolest things that's happened so far.
I kind of relate a little bit because see, when I was working in radio and we had this big, like, you know, giveaway type of some sort. There was a couple of people there who wanted me to, I was like, I feel like a movie star here or something. It's like, but then that transferred over into doing the comic book stuff at Comic Cons. Yeah. It's like, you know, hey, can you sign them up? Oh yeah, of course. You know, I'm kind of used to. I mean, I'm nowhere near a celebrity or nothing, but it's like when somebody asks me to sign something, oh, yeah, sure, no problem. So, yeah. It's a good feeling when somebody wants you to sign and want to take a picture. That somebody wanted to know if I had a picture of me just to like, so like a hang in a room or something. I met this guy. I'm not a celebrity or nothing, but okay.
That's weird. You're
trying to you slowly.
That's the weirdest question I've ever had so far. It's like, do you have a picture of you? No, not really, but sorry.
You gotta get one of those cool headshots.
Yeah.
It's an experience doing shows, and it's a lot of fun, but it's a lot of work, right? It's a lot of stress. It's a financial investment, whether you break even, make money, lose money, wherever you stand. But it's fun. I mean, just to have people like what you do, you know. And yeah, there's the criticizers out there and all those kind of people, trolls and all that, but it's still a lot of fun. You know, and at the end of the day, like, that's why I do it.
I especially like I said, the last Comic-Con I went to in Cleveland, how I had my comics, and of course I had this other thing for adults. The more I'm noticing now, the more stuff or more different things you have on your table, the better it is, because now you're not just one trick pony. Like, even I have the comics in this rack. It's like a middle rack, and it's like a magazine rack, and it's like all the comics and the books and everything else are there, and the timing of April is over here. So it's like it's separate from everything else. But it was just interesting to notice that they wanted what some the kids would look at that and the adults would look over here. So it's good to have more than just one thing on your table. So
That was the big thing we did with ours. Like I made sure, like Greg was saying, I set up the whole table. I was like, no, we need to like, we have a lot of stuff. Let's make them realize how much stuff there really is.
Yeah.
And so like, we laid it out pretty, actually, Greg, pull it up again real quick. Just because they weren't on to see it earlier. But yeah, we like, I laid it out. So yeah, there it is. So you can see like we had all our comics laid out. You can see comics behind us and to be in front of us. We've got prints. We've got, you know, our shirt. We got magnets and stickers. Mm-hmm. And yeah, so yeah, we set this thing up so that it was all over the place.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. It really is. As an artist, I mean, I have portfolios of fan art. Obviously I do that. And, you know, I sell prints. Kind of like on the fence about that as well, but as an artist, like they sell, people love fan art, you know, so that's a good part of it. But I also have all the original art for Ice Pick that I sell. And speaking of experiences, the last show I did of last year, which was in Tacoma, Washington, a little bit south of Seattle, I had a guy come up and buy two original art covers for Ice Pick. And I'm like, that was the first time I sold original art of my original character at a show, you know, and it's like 5 years in. And I mean, milestones, like that was a really, really cool milestone, you know, to have someone like your original character that much that they're buying the original art, you know? So
awesome.
It's a little different as an artist, right? As a writer, it's one kind of experience. As an artist, it's different.
Exactly.
Because I do kind of it all. I also think
it's probably more profitable for an artist to go to a show than a writer, because they can sell art. They can draw something there.
Yeah, you're totally right, Frank. I mean, that's what my wife said. Like when I started doing Ice Pick and doing stuff, and I did some indie coloring work before I even did Ice Pick, and we'd go to shows. I mean, she's a comic fan too, and it's like, no one cares about the colorists. Like, you're not bringing in a crowd if you're like a digital colorist for these indie books, right? You're not going to sell a lot. She's like, now the artists, that's where it's at. And she's like, I know you're a good artist. Like, you should do that and you know, do a table. And you're right. As an artist, you have a little bit more kind of interaction, a little bit more people come up because you're like creating that art, right? It's weird. It's a weird thing.
Okay, next question.
Who are your role models or inspirations, and how have they influenced your work?
By all means, Frank.
Oh. well, I guess it depends on what I'm, because see, I can't really think of it on top of my head. Because, see, I love to write, and I've read things by Stephen King, but that's not really my genre. Mm-hmm. I love watching animation stuff and cartoons and stuff like that. When you're talking like, okay, a movie stuff, it's like in the top of my head, I know, not Jack Black. I can't think of his name, but he was a, he's a director and he writes stuff. And anyway,
what's something he created?
I'm having complete brain fart. I don't even like the guy's name. I'm trying to think of the guy's name.
Comedy drama.
Well, he made movies, but he's a director. He recently had a heart attack. I forgot his name.
Kevin Smith.
Thank you.
Oh yeah.
Oh my god, I couldn't think of the guy's name. I adore the guy because he seems like an average Joe, just making movies. Now, obviously, I don't make movies. I make, you know, stuff. But, I mean, he's also a writer, too, you know.
Yeah.
And there's some other people that – oh, there's a guy on TikTok that I, he's a blind voice actor. But oh, even though he's just he's blind – and I only have one eye. But, you know, I he inspires me because he goes surfing. He goes skateboarding. He does everything, even though he's blind. His name is – God, I can't forget his name now. But he's known as the blind surfer, and he's in California, and he does
a very specific thing. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. But he's the voice of Fox News tonight on Fox News, and he does all sorts of other stuff too. But he's inspiration to me because he does a lot of stuff, even though he's blind. I mean, he's not totally dark blind. I mean, but you know, he says it's his vision is all blurry and he's legally blind, but he's blind, you know?
Yeah.
But he does so much stuff, even though he's blind, and he does it anyway. Matter of fact, he told the story of when he was a little younger, people kept, oh, don't tell anybody you're blind, that you're a voice actor. Don't tell anybody you're blind. It's like, well, he got over that eventually because people are inspired by him now.
Yeah.
Because he does all this voice acting stuff. He has like a million followers on YouTube. And he does all this great stuff, even though he's blind. So, and he's awesome. He's kind of an inspiration to me. Even like, again, it's not, you know, comic stuff, but as a voice actor, he's an inspiration to me. And hey, if he can do it, I know I can. But yeah, Dan Pobemeyer too is another one that I really enjoy to talk about because he created Phineas and Ferb. He created all these different things on Disney. Again, he's not a comic artist, but he's a guy who creates something for Disney, and he doesn't seem like but it's like a jerk guy, you know. his TikTok videos seem genuine. So yeah, he's another guy.
Down to earth.
What's that?
Down to earth.
Yeah, real down to earth type of guy. Yeah, exactly. And he's like I say, created Phineas and Ferb. And matter of fact, when he announced there were more episodes of Phineas and Ferb coming, I made a little TikTok video, and he used a bunch of other people too, but he used my video in his, like, hey, people are reacting to it. This is awesome. So that was pretty cool.
That's cool.
Yeah, for me, it's because of the era I grew up in. You know, I'm going to name drop like all the greats, right? I mean, Jim Lee, McFarlane. You know, even later on, you know, Rob Layfield, Stephen Platt, Mark Silvestri, all those guys, early Image 90 guys were a huge influence because, I mean, they bucked the system. They kind of was like, hey, we're corporate, we're working for big companies, but we're going to do our own thing. And, you know, I was in high school at the time. So, you know, I was like, why don't I do my own thing? And that's really where the whole idea for creating Ice Pick kind of blossomed, was from those guys showing people, average people, that you can still enjoy what you do what you want to do, and you don't have to work for like big corporate America type of stuff. But for art, I'd say my biggest influence is probably Todd McFarlane. You know, he's a fellow lefty, and me and my wife met him, and he is, I've seen him on videos and stuff, obviously, but a few years ago we met him at Emerald City, and he is just one of the coolest, down-to-earth, like, I mean, he's just that unique kind of guy. And, you know, I don't feel that there's an ego there. There's a very humble appreciation of his fans. And, you know, Jim Lee's another guy. I got to meet him. And again, very humble, very no ego, right? Like, I'm the greatest artist ever, but that's okay. Because, you know, I'm going to take the time to meet you and shake your hand and sign your books and, you know, just take a few minutes and chat with you. And to me, like, not only is it like an artistic or maybe a creative inspiration, but it's a person inspiration. Like, I want to be that kind of creator. I want to be that creator where people can feel comfortable coming up to me at my booth. And I've spent time, you know, talking with people, not just comics, but whatever, you know, whatever on their mind. And I think that makes the experience that much better. You know, when you're able to just have those kind of natural, not necessarily what's your character, what are you selling me, but it's those other conversations where you start building kind of friendships and relationships. So, yeah, I mean, all the early 90s image guys, they were a huge influence.
When I go to cons, I have often encourage people to talk about like animation and cartoons and stuff. Yeah. And so we have a conversation about anime or My Hero Academia or the Owl House or Amphibia or something. And they're like, oh, what is this stuff, by the way? Well, if you want to know, I'll tell you. It's good conversations with people about different things. And when they see Turcon or the, that kind of reminds me of Kim Possible. Yeah, I'm a fan of Kim Possible. That's why her lip looks like that a little bit. You know, yeah. So there, you kind of connect it to what you're creating. But yeah, a lot of times just having conversations with people is exactly what people get to know you for. So
right, right, yeah. That's
cool. Nice.
What can fans look forward to from you in the future?
Well, more books, more stories. I can say Annabelle is launching Saturday. It's my next Kickstarter. We can throw out, you know, I'll send you guys links or whatever. But, you know, it is the, real quick, the idea behind Annabelle is it's part of the trilogy where Ice Pick was part one, and that was his story. And his genre is the 90s superhero book. Annabelle is more femme fatale, strong female character. It's a little bit different genre. It kind of relates to a different crowd. And yet it still has all the characters in it from Ice Pick. There's the three main characters, Ice Pick, Annabelle, and their friend Luke. And, you know, that is her story. These four issues are going to be her story and, you know, where she got her powers, how she got stuff, history, stuff like that. Next year, I already have issue one written of Luke, and that's going to be a four-issue miniseries of his story. And again, like, it's still, it's going to be a horror book. It's a different genre, but it's going to include the cast, right? It's the Ice Pick gang is what I like to say. It's the three main characters that, you know, I'm telling each of their own stories. And after that, actually, I'm going to start transitioning into one-shots for all of my stories because I feel like that's kind of a nice compact way, you know, it's here's one book, it's, you know, 40, 60, 80 pages, whatever, and it tells a complete story. And I think a lot of people like, you know, graphic novels and one shots. And that, again, is going to have those three main characters in it. And it's just about them, you know, fighting supernatural characters and creatures and, you know, mayhem, all kinds of fun stuff. So more stories. That's what I'm doing. You know, more art, more stories, more shows.
Yeah,
more merch.
Well, as for me, I'm obviously running a Kickstarter for comic number 7. I'm hoping it gets funded because technically the comic is done. It's lettered, it's print, you know, colored and everything. I just don't have the money to print it off. Yeah. So that's what the Kickstarter is for. So crossing my fingers, it's like it gets funded because then I can get printed off and take them to cons and stuff. Because if it doesn't get printed off, I just might make it a free comic online on the website or something. I don't know. But I really want to take this to at least the 10th comic and then kind of like hold off on that. But obviously I have this other book called The Taming of April. I'm hoping people will, you know, like that as well. But again, that's a totally different genre, totally different thing. It's romantic comedy. This is a superhero thing. I'm working, I mentioned a few minutes ago about this book that I'm working on called Kim Sweet, basically about a writer who meets somebody and is like, oh, yeah, I like your stories. And these the three different stories. So I'm kind of still working on that. But gosh, it's a novel. It's more of a thriller novel. And I have these ideas for other stories. But again, I love to write. I love to create stories. But a lot of times when I get an idea, I'll just write down the outline first. Mm-hmm. And it's okay, I'll get to that in a second. I got to finish this first in the story. So yeah, right now my main concern is, you know, making the Kickstarter work. That's my main thing. But after that, then I'll start other things.
Yeah.
But I have Kickstarters other
are a lot of work. Yeah.
What's that? Yeah.
Kickstarters, they're a lot.
Yeah, it's a matter of getting people's attention to it. You know, that's the whole thing. And you hope people will share it. You hope people will fund it. You hope people will, you know, pay attention to it.
Yeah.
And I don't want to bug people about it, but it's like I try to maybe talk about it like once a day. You don't want to keep saying, oh, by the way, look, oh, by the way, look, oh, by the way, look, 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 there's a Kickstarter right here. You'll bug people about it if you get, talk about it too much. So
nice.
Yeah. Cool. So now we have this other like behind the scenes section. On our platform, we have a thing called Nova Nation. Todd's like kind of into the whole platform stuff going on. Yeah. He's got his own stuff going on. Frank, you are part of our creators group on Facebook, but for some reason we don't have your stuff on the platform. I don't know if like we are going to do that. So we'll figure that out if you want that on there. But yeah, so we have two questions for Nova Nation, and anyone that actually is a member for that, they'll be able to see this part of the podcast.
Before we get to that too, where can people find you?
Well, with me, you can find me on Turkana.com. That is T-E-R-C-O-N-A, Turkana.com. That's where all the comics are, except for the Kickstarter, of course, because that's brand new. You can also find The Taming of April on there. I put it on there because it's a lot easier just to put it on one site. But you can also find The Taming of April on Amazon.com as well. As for my voice acting stuff, you can go to frankjamesbailey.com. You can go there and check out my demos and check out all the stuff. But if you want to follow me on any other social media platform, you can just Google Frank James Bailey. I'm very easy to find. But I made it purposely that way. So seriously, if you go to Google and put in Frank James Bailey, you'll find me. So that's the easiest way. I'm on Instagram, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Facebook, I'm on YouTube, I'm on TikTok, I'm everywhere.
So what do I type into Google?
FrankJamesBailey.com or Turkana, doesn't matter.
Yeah, nice. Same with me. I pretty easy to find. It's just Todd Rayner Art, came up with that like 25 years ago, ridiculous. Like when emails were a thing, I'm like, I better snatch this up. So it's everything is Todd Rayner Art, my Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. I have a Etsy shop that has some art prints, original art. I do sketch cards for tops and stuff like that. So, you'll see stuff like that pop up. My books are on Etsy. I also have a new merch shop I launched, and that's Dark Space Studios. So, you can search Dark Space Studios LLC, search my name, Ice Pick. It's everywhere.
Nice. Cool.
Okay.
So thanks for everyone who's watching, and now we're going to Wayne's World over to Nova Nation.
Wayne's World.